Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Masterpiece Live Conference Call Network. You're speaking to Antonia Hoggins, and tonight launches the first night of our Masters of Awakening series. And tonight I have the honor and the privilege and the fun of having Robert Williams from Psyche with us, and we're going to discuss how to reprogram the subconscious mind. So let me tell you a little bit about Rob. Rob is known as the originator of Psyche, which was downloaded to him around 1988 and 1989. For the first 14 years of his career, Rob was a direct participant in the U.S. corporate world, holding management positions in the backpacking, energy management, and telecommunications industries. And then he had a spiritual awakening during this time around 1988, and he moved out of the business environment and into a life of service as a professional psychotherapist. He was inspired by his new perspective, and he studied many non-standard modalities for change, both ancient and contemporary. Out of his studies came a series of intuitive insights that became the body of work now called Psych-K. It is a reflection of his personal commitment to helping individuals recognize their divinity, discover their greatness, and become the peace they seek. So with that, I'd like to welcome to tonight's program, Robert Williams. I think you get that a lot, don't you?
Well, he does make me laugh, I will say that, but our bank accounts aren't the same, I'm sure.
Welcome tonight, Rob. Rob, before we even start, I just have your book in my hand, and there's a couple of things I'm going to say, because the book is called Psych-K, The Missing Piece, P-I-E-C-E, and then it's crossed out, and underneath you have Peace, P-E-A-C-E, and In Your Life. So it's just kind of, here's a little synchronicity for you. You know, my company being Masterpiece Life, P-I-E-C-E, Life, and it's actually both Masterpiece, P-I-E-C-E, and Masterpiece, P-E-A-C-E. Anybody typing in both names will come to me. So when I picked up a book, I thought, well, isn't that neat? We both did the peace play with that. So that was just a little synchronicity that I thought was fun. And I love how you start your book by saying, may you recognize your divinity, discover your greatness, and become the peace you seek.
It's a very important phrase to me, and it came to me when I was considering, as an author, it was my first book. Normally authors dedicate their books to their spouses or their children or their mentors or some such thing, and it's all good, it's all right. And I went through my litany of all the people that have helped me along the way and helped me shape my life, and I realized that the book wasn't really about individuals. It was really about the collective consciousness of humanity, and that each of us, from my point of view, the greatest gift you can give yourself or anything or anyone else is this recognition of our connectedness through whatever your concept of the divine is. It's a non-religious concept, as far as I'm concerned. It's an overarching spiritual concept. You can call that divinity whatever you want, but it seemed to me that number one, if we were all recognizing our divinity, we would discover what a lot of people say, well, what's my purpose in life? Well, I think your purpose is to give the gifts that are uniquely yours to the rest of us who have unique gifts to give back. And ultimately, finding that purpose and living a purposeful life, peace is the inevitable byproduct of that. And peace is not only what we want individually, Antonia, it's what the world needs more of now. So if the world's going to have more of it, it starts with each of us.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you on that. Absolutely. Now, Rob, what is Psyche, and when did it start?
Well, as you mentioned earlier, it started in about 1988 and 89, and it was an interesting beginning, because it was me sort of following my path, doing as many things as I could. I was quite the workshop junkie in those days. This is back in the early 80s and then leading up to 88, 89. Studied many, many things after leaving the corporate world to to understand the nature of change, because change, it seemed to me, was one of the hardest things to do, no matter what. It just took all this willpower and this force, and it seemed so hard, and I had many things in my life I wanted to change, like so many people. And so I went on my own quest to find out what was going on with change, because I had gone to the University of Colorado. I got a master's degree in counseling, and I learned what they knew how to do. And what I found out was some of it was very useful, mostly insight-based talk therapy. That's focused on the past. It's pulling up the things that happened to you and assigning values to them and meaning. And then the idea was that the sheer power of those insights, of the revelations of who did what to whom and when and how that affected me, was somehow going to make things real different. And in some cases, it did. I have a great deal of respect for insight-based therapy when what you're looking for is insight. But when you're looking for change specifically, I didn't find it a particularly effective way to be a catalyst for change for people. So I kept looking other places outside the university. And in Denver, Colorado, where I lived at the time, there were a plethora of different modalities surfacing almost daily, it seemed like. It was really the heyday for complementary medicine and energy medicine, which it wasn't called then, but it is now mostly. And so I had the benefit of being in a hot spot for all of that, studied many different disciplines, and I found value in all of them. And I also found something missing in all of them. I hadn't found my niche yet, so everything seemed to be not quite what I was looking for. And it turned out on one day when I was putting together a workshop for a discipline I was teaching at the time, I ran into a snag, and I made a mistake on a flyer that I was putting together. And I did this twice, and it just aggravated me so, because I was quite the perfectionist in those days. I've given up a lot of that, but in those days it was really one of those moments when I was really angry at myself, and so for making these mistakes, which turned out to be costly. I kept having to go back and redo this brochure and get more printed. And in those days, money was a scarcity and a struggle for me, and I had a family and was the primary breadwinner, and so there was extra pressure. And what really happened was, in a moment of rage, not a moment of being centered in the Buddhist mind fashion or in deep prayer, I was just ranting. And I said in my rant, in essence, okay, God, if you don't want me to do this, the thing I was messing up, what do you want me to do? And the truth was, it was a rhetorical question. I didn't really expect an answer. But in fact, Antonio, I got an answer. I got an answer in a fashion that I'd never had an answer before, and that was something I could see in my mind's eye. I didn't visualize well then. I don't really now. So it was very unusual for me to see something as clear as instructions in a written form in my head. So the experience was so unique that I rushed into the house. I was outside at the time ranting, and I went to my computer, and I typed in what I saw in my mind. And it turned out, after it was complete, I couldn't bring it back up. I couldn't re-see it in my mind, even if I tried. But I had a hard copy of it. So that was really the beginning of Psyche. It was one of the many patterns of Psyche that help people facilitate change at the subconscious level.
So you cry out to the universe or God or Source, and you get an answer unexpectedly.
Right.
Did you start teaching it and practicing it on yourself right away, and did you notice changes?
Yeah, what I did was I stayed on stun for quite a while, because I had never had anything like that happen to me, and I wasn't sure where the information came from, since I had no point of reference. But there it was. That part was undeniable. It was in physical form, and there were instructions. And some of the bits and pieces I was familiar with. I mean, I remember running into those ideas, or some of those ideas anyway, in different disciplines. It's as if you walked up to a puzzle and you took several puzzle pieces out. They didn't make sense at the time. They were nested in other disciplines, and some of the things weren't nested in anything. There were things I had never seen before. So it was as if all of these, the reason for me going through all of this with all these other disciplines was to become familiar with some basic concepts, and then the alchemy of Psyche was put together with some things I had never seen before and created something that truly unique. And that was the revelatory part. So I sat with it for a while. Eventually I thought, well, I need to try this out. I'm that curious. And I thought, just in case harm could come to anybody, I should be the guinea pig. So I was the main guinea pig. I had a friend of mine and had him facilitate this particular pattern with me. And not only was there no negative side effects or unpleasantness to it at all, it was really quite revelatory. I mean, when I was finished with that pattern, it took about 45 minutes to facilitate. In this case, it's one of the longer ones. Most of them are 5 to 10 minutes, but this was my major pattern shift. And I just felt lighter and more alive than I could ever remember feeling. But I was only, you know, I was only an example of one. I thought, well, I can't yet, you know, introduce this to my private practice clients because I don't know what the heck I'm doing yet. So I experimented some more with other people. They became guinea pigs. So I kept it in a fairly close, tight circle until I was absolutely certain that no harm could come and only good would come. And that took about probably 3 or 4 months of working with different people before I introduced it to my private practice. And that was the day I understood that I'd been given something that was absolutely amazing and that needed to be shared with other people. So I did introduce it in my private practice, and it stayed there for a couple of years, actually, maybe longer, before I realized that I could teach this to other people and they could learn to do it for themselves so they didn't have to come to me and depend on me.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. And I know that that's also that actually next week here in Toronto, there is going to be a Psych K workshop facilitated by one of your trained practitioners, Maureen. And
yes.
People can get, we'll tell them a bit later in the program how they can get more information about that. So then you went from downloading it, testing it on yourself, testing it on a close circle of friends, then testing it in your practice with your clients, and then to realizing this needs to be taught, and now it's being taught all over the world.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's come a long way, baby, as they say, from the days of me thinking, what the heck is this? It's been around 20 years now, and yes, it's taught worldwide by certified Psych-K instructors. There are, I think, around 45 of them now, and it's a wonderful thing for me. I don't get to teach that much anymore because I have all these other instructors doing that, but I do get to teach a couple of times a year, and it's such a rush, such a joy to get to do the work, and I get the vicarious benefit of hearing from the instructors and the experiences that participants have in the classes that they teach, and this lovely sort of synergy of energy that happens. People walk in with a set of limiting beliefs in some area of their life, or maybe multiple areas of their life, and they walk out free from that. And that's, you can't, no amount of money could substitute for the joy I feel when I hear that what was given to me 20 years ago is making a positive difference in a world that needs positive differences.
I totally understand that feeling, because there's nothing I love more than putting on a workshop and watching people's lives transform and see possibilities that they never thought were possible before come to life. And watch people's, not only face, but I'm sure you've seen this too, Rob, their face and their body move into a peaceful state.
Some of them enter an excited state, but it's because they haven't been excited for years. what I saw, I think when I got that experience you're talking about, it was the first time I looked at a group of people, and I looked into their eyes, and eyes are the windows of the soul. So light not only goes into the eyes, but it comes out. it's a mechanism for receiving and actually moving light out of your body to other people. So I watched the light in some of these people's eyes, and when they came in, it reminded me of a furnace, and it reminded me of the pilot light being on. It was something, you know, the light was on, but it was real dim. It's as if the people had come, they tried so many other things, and as much as they wanted all those things to work and all the books that they've read and all the insights they had, they still were profoundly disappointed because things hadn't changed as much as they'd really wanted them to. And when they got it, when they realized this was the genuine article and they could learn this and do it with themselves and for themselves, all of a sudden they had experiences in the class that you could just see the whole burner kick on. There was so much light rushing out of their eyes, and I was bathed in this light, and I felt just completely blessed.
Now, Rob, we've already mentioned a couple times in speaking, you know, the term limiting belief.
Yes.
I know that for anybody that's aware and awake of working on themselves, you know, they can't go very far until they realize they have limiting beliefs, a lot of them being subconscious, and that they need to move through those. Now, in your book, you talk a lot about subconscious beliefs. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, that's an extremely important concept, because it's only really in the last 10 years or so that neuroscience and the scientific community has come into an understanding of the difference between the conscious mind and its capabilities, its job, its functions and characteristics, and the subconscious mind. That was always considered kind of the deep, dark repository of repressed desires, if you're much into the Freudian model anyway. And so people tended to stay away from that. They didn't understand it. They were afraid of it and so on. But neuroscience in the last 10 years has revealed that really it's not a deep, dark abyss of repressed anything. What it is a tape recorder system. Essentially what you're getting is a bunch of beliefs, a bunch of limiting beliefs. Most of them tend to be that. If you want to know what your beliefs are, just take a look at your life. It's not tough to figure out, because what you're doing behaviorally, what you're saying and thinking and how you're behaving, oftentimes out of your conscious awareness, produces the life you experience outside of you. And once you understand that, rather than get into the, oh my God, I'm doing this and I'm a victim of it and all that, no, on the contrary, the revelation that your subconscious mind has outdated software, outdated programs that are running behaviors below the level of your conscious awareness and producing effects that you don't want is revelatory. And then the next step, of course, is using something like Psyche. In this case, it's a very useful, very effective way to access, communicate with the subconscious, and update that software. So you're running on your current wisdom, not your childhood programs.
And of course, you know, we make up so many beliefs when we're 5 years old that are going to limit our experience in life. How do you go about shifting them?
Well, that's what Psyche is about. The technique portion of Psyche, the process itself, is multiple. Probably the easiest, quickest explanation has to do with hemispheric integration. We have a left and a right hemisphere of the brain. And It turns out, what science does know about that is that when the two hemispheres are activated and operating simultaneously, that is to say the activation is left and right hemisphere at the same time, in Psyche we call that a whole brain state. It turns out it's an ideal state for many things. For one, high-functioning individuals operate out of that consciousness all the time, or at least most of the time. And when they do, whatever talents and abilities they have are optimized. When they're not, then, and you over-identify energetically with one hemisphere or the other in a given situation, then your response potential is limited. For instance, the left hemisphere is your logical, linear, rational hemisphere. It breaks things down into parts. It tends to be it's your language center, so your words come from the left hemisphere of the brain. The right hemisphere is real different. It's your emotional center. It's the synthesis center, not the analytical center. It doesn't break things down. It puts things together and makes sense of things. It makes connections. It sort of connects the dots, so to speak. It's also where you get to have some fun in life. It's what makes life interesting and fun to do. It also tends to be free instead of time-driven. It's the one that says, you know, it's a really nice day. Can we just go outside now? You know, can you leave this desk and this computer for a while? And sometimes, you know, there's quite the battle going on. I suspect you and maybe many of your listeners have had that experience of thinking, there are two people inside here and they're arguing. I don't know which one's going to win. And of course, it's all you, but it's different perspectives from the left and the right hemisphere of the brain. So one of the things we do in Psyche, because one of the other major benefits of this whole brain state, is that it reduces the resistance to internalizing a new idea dramatically. So if you can activate both hemispheres of the brain at the same time, and then enter a new belief. You can do this sometimes silently. We use belief statements in Psyche generally. So you would call them affirmations, except that when we use affirmations, and have for the past 40 or 50 years they've been popular in this country, the issue with affirmations is you're standing in front of a mirror saying, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, over and over, and the mirror staring back and saying, no, you don't, no, you don't, no, you don't, no, you don't. So the battle rages. What Psyche does is it eliminates the battle. It's kind of like calling a truce with a white flag, and everybody calms down, and everybody listens then to what's going on. The both hemispheres are listening at the same time because you've activated them. You can activate them physically. Sometimes you can do it with consciousness, but we usually use some physiological activity. There's a sitting posture that's an ancient asana, a yogic posture that does that. We're body's electric, and when you configure your body in a particular way, you actually trigger the activation of the hemispheres. There are also physical movements that will do the things. They're called whole brain movements, and that's one aspect of Psyche. So understand that the goal ultimately is, first of all, get your mind receptive to the new belief, then process it while both hemispheres are active, And it generally takes 2 to 5 minutes to change beliefs, no matter how long you've had them. I mean, we have this myth in our society, especially in mainstream psychology, that if you've had a belief for a long time, it's going to take a long time to change it. Well, it turns out that's not really true. If you think about what beliefs are, Antonia, they're not things. You crack somebody's head open and look for little Kodak moments in there, little pictures of parents and history. None of that's there. What memories are photons of light held in an electromagnetic field. It's a quantum event inside your head. And so what it is about doing is moving energy, reconfiguring molecularly something that is constitutes a memory. And then you're free from the history of that memory. It's not that it eradicates memory. You wouldn't want to do that. You want to remember what happened. But you don't want it to have control over you now if it represents a limiting belief. So Psyche intervenes at that level, changes the core software, and then from that moment on, that's your new belief. It's just as habitual as your old way of being that you were trying to break with willpower or positive thinking or all that stuff, which works to a point, but as soon as you get much resistance from the subconscious, boy, is it ever hard.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know for your workshops, they're done in such a way that someone could either come and participate just from themselves because they want to do this work on themselves, or someone can come and practice and take the workshop because they want to try on the loved ones, work on their friends. So it's not just something you're coming to learn to become a practitioner in, it's something that you're coming to learn for yourself.
Absolutely. Most people that come to the workshops and have for the last 20 years don't come because they want to go out and do it professionally. Professionals do come, all the way from psychologists, psychiatrists, psychotherapists, social workers, and so on. It's open to everybody, and you would take the same tools that go back to your professional environment and use it professionally, whereas you don't have to have a professional background to understand how to make it work. And so the instructions are very clear. They're step-by-step. I've had people as young as 9 years old in the Psyche classes. Kids get it really well because there's not all this processing. You know, adults, you get about over 40 years old, and then you want to sit around and talk about all your woes and share all your problems and spill your guts about your divorces and your exes and, your financial woes and all that. Kids just are real straightforward. They just say, look, can this help me? Because this is what I want to do. And mm-hmm. So you help them create a belief statement. You use muscle testing, which is the entry point to connect with the subconscious mind. That gives you a communication link up, and then you can do the work. Then you can engage the subconscious, and in fact, you engage another part of the mind too, called the superconscious, and we can talk about that some if you like. That's kind of a unique aspect of Psyche that isn't associated with most modalities that are just looking for symptom relief.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move into that, because I also want to touch, we did want to go into the superconscious, because I know that your work, that the Psyche work works to work with the superconscious, and I know that you've also done a lot of work with Dr. Bruce Lipton.
Yes. Yeah, Bruce is a dear friend of mine. I've known Bruce for about 20 years, and we've worked together at least every year for about the last 10 or 11 years. And we do four-day events occasionally in the United States and in other countries as well. He's a dear friend and a marvelous man, a marvelous human being, has really helped people, not just scientists but lay people, understand the nature of the connection between biology and psychology, the mind and the body, and our beliefs being fundamental to instructing the body on what to print out physiologically. So he's really bucked the system that mainstream science has had for quite some time, that we're just victims of our genes. If you get a bad deal on the genes, well, that's just too bad. Mm-hmm. And he's real clear and shows you the science that that's not the case, that your genes express themselves 99% of the time from the mind's point of view. What you think affects the expression of your genes. So it does make a huge difference what your beliefs are if you're going to have any effect directly on your own physiology.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, you have a section in your book called Speaking the Language of the Subconscious. So can you comment on how you define subconscious and how this work has assisted you in communicating with the subconscious, the superconscious?
Oh, the superconscious. Yeah, okay, let's talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
The superconscious, to me, you can plug in whatever name you'd like, spirit, higher self, God. It doesn't matter what name you give it. It's that part of you that is aware of the grandest version of the grandest vision of who you are as a spiritual being having a human experience. I like to think of it as really benevolent parents, that they're the kind of parents that are so wise that they let you do what you want to do until, of course, it gets really dangerous, then they might intervene. But basically, it's the wise part of you that can see the big picture in your life. And so, to me, the spiritual aspect of life is so important. And for me personally, it's the overriding issue that if you're disconnected from spirit, then everything else is way harder. And you think it's all up to you, and there's this feeling of almost perpetual overwhelm, especially in our world today where there's no way people can process, you know, a tenth of what goes on in our lives. I mean, there's so much coming at us so fast from so many different directions, and not just in your own backyard, but worldwide with the web and the media, that people spend a good deal of their time in overwhelm. So it seems to me that connecting with your higher self, your spirit, whatever you want to call that, is really key. In fact, with Psy-K, just last year, for the first time in 20 years, I received a whole program about that, and I hadn't received any of these programs for the last 20 years other than the original material, which we worked to refine and make it easier for people to understand, but nothing new. All of a sudden, this program called the Divine Integration Retreat, which its sole purpose is to use the things you've learned in Psy-K to focus on your connection to your own divine source. And it's in the, and so far, the reports on this course are just phenomenal.
That sounds really, really interesting. So for 20 years, you've done the original work, and within this past year, the download came in on divine integration.
That and actually a medical program too, a healthcare practitioner program. This is, I guess, because of what's going on in the world where it's so crazy in the United States anyway right now. We've talked so much about health reform, but it seems that the talk's been more about reforming who's going to pay, not what we're going to do as healthcare. So reality check is people still don't have the proper access, most Americans for sure, to the healthcare system. And now they're just rearranging, you know, who's going to pay the bill for it, when real healthcare reform is reforming the nature of the healthcare system, what it is we're giving to people and calling healthcare. There's much good about the healthcare system in terms of the medical community and what they can do, especially in an emergency situation, ER stuff and trauma. But when it comes to things that are more difficult to pin down in a biological way, we're not so good at that. And that's where I think complementary medicine or integrated medicine, whatever name you want to give it, it is so essential, and that people need access to this because it's the kind of things they can learn to do for themselves and reclaim their part of their responsibility and capability to manage their own health.
I totally agree with you on that one. I mean, absolutely. Now, I know that the Psy-K work is the original work, the one I'm referring to, the book, is divided into about six sections, because you look at, there's a self-esteem, a body health, relationships, prosperity, grief and loss, and personal power. So I think this is the first time in a modality that I've seen grief and loss. I mean, a lot of modalities will heal with health and body, relationships, prosperity. You know, personal power is kind of the big overall umbrella. But this is the first one that I've seen that actually has a section in it for grief and loss. Why was that put in?
Well, I think it's real key. When I was in private practice years ago, these categories came out of the presenting problems people brought to me as a therapist. And so I'd say 95 to 99% of the time, the presenting issues and the problems could have been cast in any one or multiple of these categories. And one of the things I noticed about grief and loss, when people would come in, it's a broader subject than just losing a loved one. That's certainly a profound kind of thing, or a child or whatever. But grief and loss goes beyond that. Grief and loss goes to losing a lot of things. It can be losing your job. It can be losing your sense of self, your own sense of identity. It can be losing yourself in a relationship. A whole number of things can be, connected to and linked to a sense of loss. And when you realize that, you realize that grief is, for one, a natural part of our reality. The idea is not to stifle grief. But if grief goes on too long, then it becomes a real problem, an actual hindrance to your life. It's a very good thing to have when it's appropriate, and it's a very difficult thing to endure after a certain period of time. And in the book, I think I use the example of the New Orleans-style funeral. I think they have a pretty good concept of the whole notion, which is there's a dirge played on the way to the graveyard, which is the grieving section of this ritual of burial, mm-hmm. and people truly feel the loss that they're experiencing of this person. But the trip back from the graveyard is a celebration. It's a celebration of the person's life. It's a celebration of life in general. So then they go and have a party in memory of the person, which the person would probably have joined if they were still had bodies and could hang out there. But the point is, I think, in a nutshell, the grieving is very important, and so is the moving on to a place in your memory of love, gratitude, and celebration for that person being in your life, and then they would want you to be happy. So step back into the juiciness of life.
Mm. Now, that's an excellent point, because I don't know about all of our listeners, but typically when I thought of grief, I would think of, you know, the bigger topic, meaning of losing someone or
sure.
a friend or family member. But you're absolutely right. People do grieve a sense of loss of self, or a lot if they lose their job, and that is happening with the changes that are happening so much right now. There is so much change that I bet a lot of people are going through this grief loss unaware and suppressed, not realizing what it actually is, because they're so busy trying to find a solution that they don't realize they're actually grieving a loss of a job, a loss of stability, a loss of a friendship. So that's actually a very powerful component to have in a healing modality.
I agree.
Excellent. Well, that's excellent. I'm really happy that is being done. Now, I just kind of mentioned a bit about, you know, the changes happening right now. And, you know, we all say in our world right now that we are going through a rapid rate of change. And I'm sure people on the line and on the webcast have heard that many times before. And it's true. We are, undoubtedly. What part can Site K play to help people through this period of change?
Well, I think it's a very good question. And the way I see it is that in times of rapid change, when we can't really process the kind of change and the rapidity of that change the way we used to, in a kind of logical, linear, sequential, rational way, the overwhelm creates this state of almost going on stun. And unless we have a way for our minds to cope with this much information at once, instead of trying to do it in a logical, linear fashion, especially in the industrialized nations, we think logic is the king, we have to do it more intuitively. We have to be able to grok it. We have to be able to understand it at an emotional level and pick up the information and make choices that seem like they're not rational and reasonable. But they are if you're engaging your intuition and your logic at the same time. So again, Psyche, based on the idea that the left and the right hemisphere need to learn to play together all the time in this whole brain state, gives you an optimal way to trust your intuition and your logic at the same time. And I really think that's an important aspect of what we're going through. I mean, right now, I think if you ask most people where their fear is usually around finances. We've become so accustomed in this world to linking our security, our sense of security, with our bank accounts. And I believe that that's an extremely tenuous place to park yourself in this day and age. The financial situation, unlike any other time in my lifetime anyway, is so unstable and so uncertain that while I think people are putting a great deal of time and energy into money management, I think the currency of the future is mind management.
Very well said. And Rob, really thank you for that, because I have spoken for a long time about the fact that it's about integrating the left and the right. I know that a lot of current modalities really focus on right brain, and the battle logical left brain and no emotional left brain. And I always said, you know, guys, there's a reason why we have both sides. And I really believe that the more we integrate having left and right be working together And why is it that part of the right shuts down and the left will dominate, or vice versa? I was talked about, no, let's find ways to make left and right work together as they're meant to. And then when we can do that, I really believe that the possibilities are completely unheard of.
Agree with you completely. Our optimal performance will depend on our ability to access the full potential of our minds, conscious and subconscious and superconscious.
Totally agree with you on that one. Absolutely. So, Rob, in the workshop, I know that, I had a session with Maureen. For those on the line, I had a Psyche session, and it was very easy. And I am, you know, I've probably like you, Rob, I wouldn't quite call myself a workshop junkie, but boy, did I do a lot of stuff, all in a quest to understand, to learn, and to get shortcuts. I'm always the one that I say, how can we do this better, faster, more direct? So, yes, I probably, you know, so I was a workshop junkie, but the way I looked at it was, I want to get faster results.
Sure. Well, so did I at the time, and I'm not, that's been years ago, but at the time I was so hungry for something outside of the mainstream version of what I was taught at the university and graduate school that I tried everything. I had no reason not to. I had no point of reference. So everything that was there, you would find me at some version of that workshop at one time or another. And it was important because it gave me a kind of a survey course of the philosophies and the technology and techniques and the approaches of a whole lot of different disciplines. And I was a philosophy major at UCLA in California as an undergraduate student many years ago. And so my query has always been the big questions in life. Well, is there a God? And if there is, what's the story? And why are we here? And what's your life purpose? And what are the rules and all that kind of stuff? Well, that's not really ever gone away. But I've come to peace with a lot of it, recognizing that for me, truth has become something that looks like what works, and it's less objective and more subjective for each individual. If you're working with a particular process or program and it's working for you, then that's your truth for however long that works. And when it's not working anymore, you should find a new truth.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree with you. And everything is shifting so quickly right now. It's time to let go of what we thought was the way things should be done, or the old beliefs from the past, and realize that if we are going to create a new world and a new reality, which I really believe we do, and I absolutely hold that vision, then it means releasing limiting beliefs. It means being open to think outside the box and create a different and new way of that we all get to coexist together.
If we don't do that, we certainly will perish together in one form or another. So I think that's the name of the game for now, whether it's, you may look at it from, well, how am I going to deal with this, and what am I going to do here, and I'm out of work, or this and that challenge. The main thing is invest in yourself. Be sure that your consciousness and your perception of the world is flexible enough to handle quick turns, because that's what the world's handing us right now. The people that are mostly holding on to the old way and arguing that it has to be that way and they want to get back to the past and all that, sorry, folks, sorry, but that's not going to happen. You cling, and you will find yourself stuck and run over by just the wave, the tsunami of change that we experience in the world right now. So the most powerful thing you can learn to do is to change your point of view as is appropriate. When the world's changed, learn how to adjust quickly to that change and actually move into not just surviving it, but thriving in the change.
Very well said. Absolutely. I completely agree with you on that. It's about really embracing change and embracing flexibility and being guided. Completely agree with you. Rob, how does your work compare to, and I'm calling it work, sometimes it's difficult to put this because sometimes the word modality doesn't fit, and it's not work. So how would you call Psyche?
Well, I just think it's plain fun. I mean, if I didn't, I wouldn't do it. You know, I'm very much into the joy of life mostly, and if it isn't joyful and it isn't fun and it doesn't bring me joy to do it and I can't see the change in it, I would give this up in a minute and I would do something else. But all the years I've been involved, I've continued to push the envelope of Psyche and this information that I've been given to share with others, and I can't find the edge of the envelope yet. It never stops. It never pushes back. So that keeps me intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually engaged. And because I use the work that I you know, originated in the sense that it came through me as the original conduit. That's about what I can say for sure. But I don't call myself the creator of it because the creator created it, and I'm just handing it out as fast as I can. I was in the right place in the queue for downloads at that time, and so it's been a real pleasure and an honor to shepherd it. But I don't consider myself the creator of it. I'm creative in other ways, but I didn't synthesize that. That was already handled, and it was given to me, and I honored it. I guess that's what I could say. So it's happening, and it's out there in the world, all over the world now, and people who do access the classes, they'll know in their hearts if it's right. And I think that's where you make the connection for, well, does it feel right to go to a Psyche class? Just get still and ask yourself that question. The answer is within you. If it's not right, you shouldn't go. Because it's not right for you now, it won't work, it won't feel right, it won't slip into place. But if it is right for you, I think you'll experience what the vast majority of people experience when they come to these workshops, and that is a feeling of coming home. There's a feeling of it's all coming together. All the pieces are finally coming together of all the things you've done and studied and understood and all that. One thing about Psyche I really, really appreciate is its simplicity and elegance. You know, people say, well, it's such a powerful thing. Well, I will actually correct them. Psyche as such has no power. Its gift is to help you access the power that's already in you. And that's a really important difference between the way sometimes modalities are talked about, oh, this is powerful and that's powerful and you ought to do this, as if it's going to be done to you or on you. And this is a really important distinction in Psyche. The mainstream allopathic medical community talks about doing procedures on people, doing things to people, because it is a do-to, a do-on kind of process. And even alternative medicine, even energy psychology, mostly that language is still prevalent. You're still talking about doing this on people. Well, Psyche, you'll never be able to do it on somebody because the facilitator isn't doing it. The changes are happening inside you with the resources you bring to the dyad. The facilitator is simply giving you a mechanism for accessing your inner wisdom and engaging it. You're the one that decides what beliefs you're going to change. We in Psyche never decide what you're going to change or what you should believe. We just help you choose. You choose. We just help you believe what you want. So it's not here's a manifesto and here's what you should believe. I have personal values and some personal ideas of how the big picture is and how it works, but you know, and we share that with participants, but it's not essential that you believe any of that. You can believe whatever you like. The mechanisms involved and who you are is a fact no matter what you call it or how you deny it. So the engagement part, Psyche, is this key that opens up this inner part of you that you didn't even think was there. At least a lot of people don't. Or if they do, they're frustrated because they don't feel like they can access it. And this gives you full access to the part of you that can trigger the self-healing response emotionally, physically, spiritually. And that's a huge advantage in a world of high-speed change as we're in experiencing right now.
Well, I know that when I had my session with Maureen Korpisky, who's teaching here in Toronto this coming weekend, you know, and for me, like you, I always say, if it's not fun, then why do it? And when I was talking to Maureen, I asked Maureen, why do you do this? She said, you know what? She said, it was fun the day I learned it. It was fun the day I teach it. And I have so much fun doing it because it has never stopped being fun for me. I thought that, you know, that's a true sign of, right. You know, and Maureen, I know you're on the line, so I'll call you. It's a true sign of a master.
Because I think you're right, absolutely, Antonia. And I would say about Maureen that anybody who decides that they want to be in her presence for a couple of days is making a really healthy, wise decision. Maureen is a fabulous instructor, full of fun, full of wisdom, full of integrity. She knows what she's doing. She's one of the best instructors in the world. And I would highly recommend, if you're going to do the class and you can get yourself to it with Maureen, it would be fabulous.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And you know, to me, that's just so key because I think – sometimes in the, you know, I have a friend that calls it the spiritual Olympics when we try to outdo someone else's spirituality or outthink or outbetter. And I always thought, you know, I'm all for the intricacies that life have. But you know what? I always say, I bet there is so much more power in the simplicity and fun if we can just get ourselves back to that state. So I'm always drawn to working with energies or things that bring that out. And I've definitely found that the Psyche, the work that I did with Maureen was simple, was fun, and was easy to use. So that definitely, I'm very happy to have found it.
Well, thanks. And it was inspired. The simplicity of Psyche was really inspired by something I heard Albert Einstein say one time. One of his favorite statements was, everything should be made as simple as possible, but not simpler. So there's a point at which something gets too simple, it stops working, and there's a point at which it's unnecessarily complicated. And one of the things that has really been scrutinized carefully over the last 20 years, and every year, we take a look at how students are experiencing Psyche, and we look at ways to get it clearer and simpler so that it doesn't have to be any more complicated than is absolutely necessary to affect these safe and effective changes in a real short period of time. But if we make it too simple, you take stuff out, too much stuff out, then it's not credible, it doesn't work, and then it's too simple. So it's that fine line that says right here is the edge of where simplicity and complexity meet. No more than is necessary, no less than it will take it to work.
Absolutely. Now, Rob, how does working with Psyche as a tool, how is that different from, say, something like NLP, where you're doing linguistic programming?
Yeah. Well, actually, NLP was one of the disciplines I studied years ago, and it certainly has merits, and it's helped a lot of people change in a lot of ways. What was missing for me in almost all the other disciplines that I studied, actually, was this component of spirituality. In the days I took NLP, that wasn't really a discussion we had during the 6 months of training. It was a discussion of mechanics, mind mechanics. And it ultimately left me a little cold because it felt like it's just about how to manipulate the mind to produce an effect. But there was no spiritual guidance process. There didn't seem to be, for me anyway, personally, there wasn't enough heart in it. And so I think when Psyche came in as it did, one of the huge differences that allowed me to step fully into it, embrace it, and then ultimately share it were the permission protocols connected to the higher self concept. There was always a body-mind-spirit connection. There was always the subconscious, conscious, and superconscious mind. So, for instance, in any change process with Psyche that you'll ever do with any facilitator, if they've taken the Psyche class and they paid attention and they're reading off the sheets, the first thing after you decide what you want to change and you come up with a statement that reflects that, the first process after you make a communication link up using muscle testing as a link to the subconscious, because one of the functions of the subconscious, just to take a mystery out of this, as much as possible, is that the body is actually controlled by the subconscious mind. You don't breathe and blink your eyes and digest your food and respirate and all that consciously. We would have no lives at all except just sitting around like blobs staying alive. So your subconscious mind is taking care of all these neurological, biological functions, and one of them is muscle movement. So the reason muscle testing works at all, especially in the context of Psyche, is you're inviting the subconscious mind to respond through a physical mechanism, which is already linked up between the subconscious and the physical body, the muscles of the body, movement. And you're checking to see if there is a conflict at the subconscious level with something you might say out loud. So, for instance, you could take a statement like, I love myself. And you may have done lots of work consciously, and you have no problem believing that consciously you love yourself. But the muscle response may indicate a conflict at the subconscious level, in which case the signal from the subconscious mind to the muscle you're challenging with muscle testing would yield. It would go weak because the muscle response is determined on the strength of the signal sent to that muscle. And if the subconscious is in conflict with what you just said, even though the conscious mind be fully agreed with it, then you're going to experience this out of your conscious awareness muscle response of weakness. So that's a simple connection. Muscle testing doesn't change beliefs. It's not like what your chiropractor uses and all that. It's used very specifically in Psyche in a psychological way. So you use that as a communication link. But once you're in, you can also use the same link to talk to the superconscious. So what people do is they create a goal. Let's say you've got a financial goal, and you think, oh, I want financial prosperity. That'll solve all my problems. And in the very beginning, after you set up this communication link, the very first question you ask after you've determined that the subconscious mind does not believe what it is that you want, yet doesn't have the programs to support it, you'll ask the superconscious mind if it's safe and appropriate to make this change. Actually, the words are, it's safe and appropriate to balance for this goal now. Balance is just called, it's one of the processes. There's a whole bunch of processes, but they're all called balances. So the point is here, you give your superconscious mind first right of refusal. You may have dreamed this up because you really want it, but my experience is, and this is why I think it's so important to have this aspect of Psyche be what it is that most people are pretty clear about what they want. Seldom are they clear about what they need.
Mm.
And oftentimes they're very different, Antonia.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So no, rather than just plug in something that you don't really need just because you want it, this is the gatekeeper. Your higher self is the gatekeeper that lets you know, I understand you really want that. I understand you think that's going to solve your problem. It's really a bad idea. You just can't see it right now. So you get to know up front that you can avoid the train wreck down the road by getting what you want. I mean, how many people listening, be honest with yourselves, how many people have pursued something like crazy, got it, and then said, what was I thinking?
Mm-hmm.
This
mm-hmm.
prevents that up front. So as well-intentioned as you might be in your own life and some facilitator or practitioner is to get you what you want, what happens if it's really not a good idea spiritually to begin with? Why not ask that spiritual part of you straight up and up front? Because if you get a no, it's not a good idea, and you've got a connection with your higher self that you trust, you don't have to know exactly why. You just know not a good path to go down. Let's do something else instead. And so you move to a different goal.
Mm-hmm. Brilliantly. Absolutely. You know, I was just speaking with someone this weekend, and the question he raised, which is exactly what you're talking about right now, is the goals you are seeking, are they really your goals, or are you buying into someone else's dream? Is it really, really, really what you want? Really? So exactly like you said, maybe chasing after something that you think you want, and then you have it and you go, wait a minute, why am I here?
Look how fast your evolution can take place if you can skip all the pain of getting what you don't really want in the first place, or what you don't really need. You want it, but that's not what you need. If you want some guidance, some straight-ahead guidance from your higher self, this is what happens with every Psyche change process, because in the beginning of it, before you even get into the change process, you check in with your higher self and say, look, is it safe? In other words, it'll bring me no harm. Is it appropriate? Means in the context of your soul's growth and your being a spiritual being here on the planet in Earth school, is it a good idea? And if you get a no to that, which you've set up with muscle testing to begin with, then the best thing to do is trust that and move in a different direction. Now, it doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it's a real pain saver, you know, because you don't have to put your time and energy into something that isn't going to move you along on your spiritual quest. You get to avoid that pain and move into joy. Why would you want to do that? And I can't understand personally, except the way we've been trained is, well, if I have a good intention and I see this person suffering with some kind of symptom, and I have the know-how how to get in there and move energy around and change it for them, and they go away thinking, oh, gee, I feel so much better, you're such a great healer, and they say, yeah, well, thanks very much, you know, I got this powerful tool, and you have that kind of exchange. And then you find out that was actually a spiritual message, that symptom, trying to be delivered to you, but you flat out killed a messenger before you got the message. That is not helpful.
Rob, we're going to have you back a few more times.
Okay.
Because that is what I've been teaching people so many times, and I keep telling, you know, the alarm signals are getting louder and stronger and louder and stronger. And right now, the biggest alarm signals are financial, and a lot of people are going through financial difficulties, not because there's anything wrong with them, not because they're not good manifestors, not because they don't deserve. But just as you said, the soul wants growth. And if that's what it's going to take to go there, then it will do it. And you're right. It's on a path right now where we change or we perish. And the soul is saying, we're going to help you change, whether you like it or not. Because you agreed to this on a soul level. We've all agreed to it. So absolutely.
Well, I like to say that, at least the way I think about it now, is that change is inevitable, but pain is optional.
Yes.
You can be in pain if you want to resist the change. Then you're going to feel all the pain associated with it. And if we continue to, in psychology we call it externalizing the locus of control, if we keep thinking that money, something outside of us, another person, another thing, another situation, external to us, is ultimately going to be our source of security, we're in deep trouble. That's why coming inside to your spirit, making peace with that part of you, finding the peace in your life that I talked about at the very beginning, is so critical. If you have that peace, and you know you're going to be all right, and you know you will be taken care of, and you've partnered with divinity. It's not that you can sit back on the couch and hang out and wait for everything to happen for you, nor is it all up to you. Mm-hmm. But if you consider that you're going to put hand in hand and you're going to take a partnership role, 100% of your 50% of the relationship, whether it's in a body, an embodied being or a non-embodied being, yes, you have responsibility and you have things to do, but you're not without resources to get it done. You know, if you're given a problem, in my opinion, you'll be given the resources. If you're paying attention, you're given the resources to solve that problem. But they aren't where you think they are. Everybody keeps looking outside of themselves. And every master on the planet for thousands of years has said, the answers are within. They're not kidding.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Rob, I've been monopolizing you, and we have a couple of questions. So
sure.
Let me just ask a couple of them here. And here we go. So a question has come up is, how can it be used in cases of addiction and dependency, for example, cigarettes, alcoholism, and drug addiction?
Psyche has been used in all of those categories. As a matter of fact, one of the instructors in, I believe it's in Oregon, started out running an addictions clinic. That's what she was doing. And she found Psyche so effective, she actually became an instructor because it worked better than anything else she had used for years for addictions. So, yeah, I mean, it's about perception. How do you perceive the cigarettes? What are the cigarettes doing for you? People so think that it's just about physical addiction. It's not. I mean, physical addiction is oftentimes a very small component of it, but the psychological addiction, what you've given the meaning of smoking, how you've created that meaning and what you associate with it. Interestingly enough, and I used to work with smokers who wanted to become non-smokers, and I would say, well, what do you really get out of the cigarettes, you know, when you smoke them? And they would say, well, it relaxes me. And I say, well, that's interesting because they're filled with nicotine and it's a stimulant. How exactly does that work? You know, the chemistry is contraindicated for the symptom. The people say, well, it relaxes me when I smoke. Actually, what relaxes them is that most smokers take a really deep inhalation on that first inhale after they light the cigarette, and they sometimes will do that once, twice, maybe three times. Well, deep breathing will relax anybody, but you don't need a cigarette to do that if you can reassociate the trigger for relaxation with something else other than putting a cigarette in your mouth and having all the downside that cigarette smokes represents. I've worked with, you know, marijuana smokers have smoked for years and years and years, addictions of various levels, of various kinds, and it's always a matter of reperceiving what it is that you get from the activity, because it's a series of needs not being met, Antonia, and when you meet those needs in other ways, then you're free of what's called an addiction.
Mm-hmm. Perfectly put. Yep, that's wonderful. Yep. Then we have Anne LeBlanc writing in saying that she's read your book, watched your video with Bruce Lipton, and then sponsored the first Psyche workshop in Prince Edward Island, and practiced diligent for 6 months, and she started a small group of women. Everything went really well. And then what's happened is that all of a sudden it's working for others, but she doesn't seem to be working for herself.
Yeah, right. That's
now,
a great one.
Yeah, she says that you know, she's been saying that she's having difficulty with muscle testing and has been told that she has what's called a disorganized or scrambled energy.
Yeah.
And she's not really sure what to do.
Okay.
So she's asking if you have any insight on this.
Absolutely. Let me answer those things point blank. If she's been told she has scrambled energy and she internalizes that and believes it, her body will print it out and that'll be the proof. So, again, it's back to beliefs and perception. And then the whole notion of, well, it works for everybody else but not for me, it's real interesting because in the Psyche course itself, one of the sheets of paper real up front in the course where you're learning muscle testing, it says it has 11 statements that are things that we encourage people to internalize at the subconscious level before they move into working on that, why they came to the course. Because it's all kind of greases the skids for making the change easier. Beliefs like, it's easy and fun for me to change and so on. Well, the last one, number 11 in that list is, Psyche works for me. And the reason it got in there wasn't originally, there were only 10 of them, because a bunch of therapists came. And when they were coming to the class, these are therapists, people who usually use their skills and abilities with other people to help them. But when it came to helping themselves, they had a belief that, well, they just had too much information, and so they sort of talked themselves out of it working for them. So I'd recommend that it's Anne, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She said, okay, that she take a look at the beliefs that she's in, that she has now, maybe because of experiences compounding themselves, but deal directly with Psyche works for me. Check to see if you're still strong to that. If you're not strong to that, and if you balanced for it originally, then be sure you internalize that. And then I would check in to make sure that it's safe and appropriate, that I can change myself, that I trust my own higher self, I trust my own subconscious mind to be my friend and make these changes. Because it's just about finding and changing the right belief to allow what is obviously working in other human beings, and you have way more in common with them than you have differences with them. Mm-hmm. So it should work with you, for you beautifully. And remember, you now know how to change beliefs. So you've got not only the question, but you've got the solution right in your hands.
Mm. Thank you. Thank you. And then Ray says she would like to take Psyche to assist her children. She's got two small children. One, her eldest is 8 years old, and her younger is 6. And right now they're having a lot of conflict and a lot of she believes a lot of physical and emotional abuse between her two children, which obviously is paining her. So her question is, can she use this to assist her children to come to peace with each other?
The trick with using it with children is this. If their attention span is sufficient, and that's the main glitch with kids, especially if they're real young, maybe the six-year-old has it and that would be fine, then this will work great. If they don't, then it's a little trickier. And there are some options to doing it differently, not with their mom, that probably would overcome those challenges. But basically, two things with kids. One is they need to feel that they're in control when you're doing this. That this isn't mom essentially changing them for their own good, because they'll resent it and it won't work. They'll just not comply. They won't buy in. They won't be there. So you have to make it user friendly. And what I did when I worked with kids is I actually got on my knees, because one of the big differences, of course, between kids and adults is size.
Height. Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that is a rapport breaker, if there ever was one. So I would work on my knees. I would teach the child how to muscle test me and how they could actually make me go weak if I said the right things. And once they got it as a game and not as therapy and not as an imposition, something being done to them, again, the whole Psyche premise is you're doing this work with somebody, so you're partnering with them, and actually the resources that are necessary to make the changes 80% of the time are already in the person there, and maybe 20% of the outcome has to do with the facilitator being able to read off a sheet and do the skill sets. So whatever you're not trusting in the sense of working with your kids, remember there are options, and there's no harm in trying it, but make it a game, make it fun, and let them play in the game and be in charge once in a while. Let them muscle test you. If you do that, I think you'll build enough rapport that they'll realize that this is actually for them and something they want to do, not something mom's imposing on them.
Mm, great advice. Very well said. Well, Rob, our hour has zoomed by really rapidly. And before we go, I do want to draw all of our listeners' attention to, if you're on the webcast page, just beneath the question, the Q&A section, there is a big box with a red around. It says Psyche Toronto, June 19 and 20, which is this coming weekend. And Maureen Koropeski, who we spoke about, is actually leading the Toronto workshop. If you click on that link, it will take you to Psyche's main site page. And all you need to do, where you have on the far right-hand side, there's where you can search by practitioners. If you just look for Koropeski, Koropeski, Maureen, if you pull that up, it will pull the details for the Toronto location. And I believe, and for those of you who would like to contact Maureen directly by telephone, then her phone number is 807-626-2568. I repeat, 807-626-2568, and she will be leading the workshop here in Toronto this coming weekend. The price for the weekend is $450. It includes taxes, and if you come with a buddy, then you will get an extra $50 off. And she's also extending that $50 registration fee to anybody who has listened to this interview and heard about the workshop with Masterpiece Life here. But also, once you click on that button back on the webcast page, that will direct you to the Psych K site, and you can find a workshop anywhere throughout North America. They're all listed there for you, and I'd highly recommend that you do so. And Rob, it's been a pleasure. I think just as you said, and this is what I always tell everybody when I have any speaker on the line is, you know, close your eyes, go inside, feel if this is something for you. If it is, or if you want to try, if you want to first try out, you know, I'm a real tire kicker. I like to try a little bit of something before I jump in, and then very often I jump in pretty deep. So if you want to try a session with Maureen and see how this feels for you, then go ahead. And once again, her number is 807-626-2568. Or I believe, do you do sessions anymore, Rob, or are you just so busy right now?
Yeah, I'm unable to do sessions right now, and I live in a very, very small community of about 1,000 people in South Central Colorado, and so I'm almost inaccessible unless I'm teaching with Bruce Lipton, and then there are larger places like Denver, Colorado, and San Francisco, and so on.
Mm-hmm. So absolutely, then call Maureen. I highly recommend that you do that and register for the Toronto workshop. Just go in, follow your heart, find if this is what is right for you. So with that, Rob, I want to thank you for being here tonight. It's been a pleasure speaking to it with you. We'll have to have you come back some more and have some more discussions. It's been an absolute pleasure. And for all of our listeners, I thank you for being here tonight, both of those that are on the webcast, on the telephone, and those that are going to be listening to this replay within the next 24 hours. Thank you for being here, wherever you are over the world. And Rob, once again, thank you for tonight.
Antonia, thank you for doing the wonderful work you do and to give voices to the opinions and the understandings and the magic that's out there for people to access.
It's my pleasure and my fun. So with that, you've been listening to the Masterpiece Life Conference Call Network on this, the Masters of Awakening series. My name is Antonia Hoggins. I thank you, and I wish you all good night.